Shall we turn in our Bibles to the second book of Kings, chapter 4? This fourth chapter in the second book of Kings deals with the needy supplied, different people, different needs, and how God, through his servant Elisha, met the needs of each one. In verses 1 through 7, we saw how the Lord met the need of a widow who had two sons, but no funds. She was destitute. And now, from verse 8, we're looking at someone else who's far from destitute. She is rich, she comes from the nobility, but whereas the other, the widow, had two sons, she has a husband, but no sons. And how God met her need as well. Let's read a few verses from 2 Kings chapter 4, starting with verse 8. Now it happened one day that Elisha went to Shunem, where there was a notable woman, and she persuaded him to eat some food. So it was, as often as he passed by, he would turn in there to eat some food. And she said to her husband, "Look now, I know that this is a holy man of God, who passes by us regularly. Please, let us make a small upper room on the wall, and let us put a bed for him there, and a table, and a chair, and a lampstand. So it will be, whenever he comes to us, he can turn in there." And it happened one day that he came there, and he turned into the upper room and lay down there. Then he said to Gehazi, his servant, "Call this Shunammite woman." When he had called her, she stood before him. And he said to him, "Say now to her, 'Look, you have been concerned for us with all this care. What can I do for you? Do you want me to speak on your behalf to the king or to the commander of the army?'" She answered, "I dwell among my own people." So he said, "What then is to be done for her?" And Gehazi answered, "Actually, she has no son, and her husband is old." So he said, "Call her." When he had called her, she stood in the doorway. Then he said, "About this time next year, you shall embrace a son." And she said, "No, my Lord, man of God, do not lie to your maidservant." But the woman conceived and bore a son when the appointed time had come, of which Elisha had told her. We pause there in our reading. Shunem was a town in the Jezreel Valley, 4 miles north of the capital city of Jezreel. It's at the foot of the mountain called the Hill of Moreh, and it's the town from which David's beautiful young wife was brought when he was an old man and he needed someone young to cherish him and to keep him warm. The town of Abishag, the Shunammite. That's where this woman dwelt. She was a notable woman, noble and rich, and, which was more rare, she was also devout. She constrained him. She persuaded him to eat some food. She obviously recognized in him someone that she desired for her guest, that she felt honored in having as her guest. When we came to Canada, I remember first going to Vancouver Island to visit various places, various churches, and introduce our ministry. I was lonely. I felt lost. And there was a dear lady there, Mrs. Stevens, who took me in. She and her aged father had a home, and she had a room that she called the Prophet's Chamber. And I was always welcome there. I knew where she hid the keys, so if she wasn't at home, I could let myself in. She was like this Shunammite woman, one with a heart for God's service and God's servants. This was in keeping with the hospitality of those days. We find Abraham when he met those, when he saw those three men at a distance from him, he ran to meet them, constrained them to come and eat food before going on their way. And the next day when two angels came to Lot in Sodom, he also ran to meet them and bowed himself to them and begged them to come into his house. It was always, in those days, it was always courtesy to press your guest, to persuade them, to urge them. We find in Luke also that wonderful stranger that walked with those two disciples on the road to Emmaus. He said such wonderful things to them that their heart was burning in them, and when he made as though he would go further, they constrained him. They said, "Abide with us." They wanted more of his company. They wanted to hear more from him. And we find it also in the book of Acts. Lydia, she recognized what princes Paul and Silas were, and she invited them to his home. She had to urge them, "If you have judged me faithful, come and dwell in my house." It's an importunate hospitality, but a hospitality that comes from the heart. And perhaps Elisha showed at first a reluctance just to see whether she meant it or not. But once he knew that she meant it, he took the freedom to drop by. So it was, as often as he passed by, he would turn in there to eat some food. As she, of course, had him at her table, she would learn much from him. And in the end, she turned to her husband. And verse 9, she said, I know that this is a holy man of God who passes by us regularly. In his demeanor, in his conduct, in his words, she was so blessed to have him in her home that she decided that she would like him to be a regular guest. He passed by them regularly. We see in the end of chapter 2 that he went from Bethel to Mount Carmel, that's the last verse of chapter 2, and from there he returned to Samaria. Bethel, in the middle of the land, Mount Carmel to the northwest, Samaria a little bit inland and southeast. So he made a kind of a loop, a circuit, very much like Samuel the prophet used to do, making a circuit, going about in a teaching circuit. Incidentally, we learn from that there are those that are called by God to exercise that kind of ministry. Not a settled ministry where they are just in one place, but where they go from one place to another in order and always come back again to follow up and to see how the believers are doing. This is a form of evangelism as well as pastoral ministry. And she noticed he was passing by them continually. That is, that he was diligent about his ministry. He passes by us regularly, and therefore she decided he needed a small upper room on the wall. In those days, the upper room could be reached by the outside staircase, and it was usually on the roof. You can still see houses like that in Israel. She gave him a place for rest, for study and prayer. It was like that with his predecessor, Elijah. The widow who took him in had a little room for him by himself. That's where he took her little son when her little son had died. She coveted the presence of God through his servant. In Romans 16, we read about others like that, and we see here the invaluable ministry of the ladies, of the women. How much they have done to help the work of God by this kind and unobtrusive ministration. In Romans 16, verse 6, Paul is writing to the Romans and he says, greet Mary, who labored much for us. The word labor there is a strong word. It means that she really put herself out. She worked very hard. In verses 12 and 13, greet Tryphena and Tryphosa, who have labored in the Lord. Greet the beloved Persis, who labored much in the Lord. And verse 13, greet Rufus, chosen in the Lord, and his mother and mine. Well, he wasn't Rufus's brother, but she mothered Paul. She looked after him. She made a fuss of him. So he said, she's as good as my mother. What a great ministry that is. The Lord Yeshua, when he came to Jerusalem, we read in Luke, there were many that came with him out of Galilee that ministered to him out of their substance. An invaluable contribution to the ministry of the gospel. And now we find here he is in verse 11, exhausted by the heat, by the travel, like our master who sat on the well at Sychar because he was weary with his journey. Verse 11, and it happened one day that he came there and he turned into the upper room and lay down there. After he had recovered some of his strength, he felt the urge to do something for his hostess. Verse 12, then he said to Gehazi, his servant, call this Shunammite woman. When he had called her, she stood before him. With respect, he wanted to acknowledge her kindness. She wished to demonstrate her respect to him. So we read, she stood before him. And here is a strange thing. He didn't speak to her directly. It could be that the courtesy of the day required indirect address. You have traces of it also in certain languages, in certain European languages. I know in Italian, you speak of someone in the third person. You don't say you, you say he or she. And in other, perhaps other languages as well, it's a form of courtesy, indirect you, because of the respect to the other person. That's why when the disciples came back after having gone into Sychar to get some food, they marveled that the Lord was speaking with the woman of Sychar, although they didn't question him on it. His question was, look, you have been concerned for us with all this care. What can I do for you? Do you want me to speak on your behalf to the king or to the commander of the army? That shows what standing he had in the royal court, that he could influence the king or the general. They respected him for what he had, for the help he had given them in their expedition that we read about in chapter 3. Her reply was, to be with my own people is better than any preferment. I dwell among my own people. And so she left. What she denied, though, what she declined from the prophet, she was later grateful to receive from his servant, as we will see in chapter 8. At the moment, she didn't see any need. But when God makes an offer, it is because he sees the need in advance. And although at the time she turned down that need, she didn't need to be spoken for to the king, I dwell among my own people, but to give us a preview of what we find in chapter 8, she came back after 7 years of famine and she found that her property had been expropriated. Then she really needed to speak to the king. Elisha wasn't around to speak for her, but Gehazi was. And Gehazi put in a good word for her. And so she found she did need to be spoken for to the king. And she got back her property. What can you and I learn from this? God gives us promises in his word. And right now, we do not see our need for that, for what God offers us there. But remember, those promises are there, as Isaiah the prophet puts it, Who will hearken and hear for the time to come? Those promises are not given to us to choose or to refuse. They're all in anticipation of some felt need sometime. And therefore, we are to thank God for that promise, and although we do not have need to avail ourselves of it right away, we can put it in, as it were, on the back burner. Because believe me, one day you will say, thank God for that promise. That's what happened to this lady. She didn't know, and God excused her ignorance. But another thing, in his grace, he did not withdraw the offer. He left it on the table, and she was glad to pick it up later on. That's how God deals with you and with me. In our short-sightedness, we pass by so many things that he has for us. But sooner or later, when we have need, God says, the door is still open. The offer is still on the table. Would you like to avail yourself of it now? Isn't that marvelous grace on the part of God? Have you found it so? You will. If you're a believer, sooner or later you will find it so, in one way or another. But we come back now to what Elisha says, and we find that his servant was more perceptive than he was. What then is to be done for her? Verse 14. He really wanted still to benefit his hostess, and Gehazi noticed there was not the patter of tiny feet around. Risking, she was under the reproach of childlessness. It was childlessness that made Rachel say to Jacob, give me children or else I die. It was the childlessness of Hannah that made her weep before God and make a vow, if you give me a son, I will lend him to you all the days of his life. And Samuel was born. She was under the reproach of childlessness. She had a husband, unlike that widow at the beginning of this chapter. She had means, unlike this widow. But she had no sons, and this widow had two. So we find her need was different, and God met her need. So Elisha realized immediately what he could do for her. So he said, call her. When he had called her, she stood in the doorway. And then he gave her this promise and the prophecy of a son, very much like God making the promise to Sarah that she was going to have a son. When Abraham saw those three visitors and ran to meet them, he realized very soon that one of them was the Lord himself. One of those three men was not an angel. He was the angel of the Lord. He was God himself. We read he was Yahweh because Abraham stood before him and pleaded with him and prayed for any righteous that might be found in Sodom and Gomorrah. It was this divine person appearing as a man that said, about this time next year, Sarah shall have a son. Her response shows that he touched a raw nerve. Verse 16, no, my Lord, man of God, do not lie to your maidservant. That was it. That was the thing that was so close to her heart. She couldn't bear to be tricked or to be teased or to be disappointed in this matter. Fearful that what she most desired might not happen. But the Bible says the woman conceived and bore a son when the appointed time had come, of which Elisha told her. She gave her what she dared not think was possible. The Bible says, delight yourself in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. She showed that she delighted herself in the Lord because she took pleasure in offering kindness to Elisha, God's servant. In Isaiah we read, "Rejoice, thou barren that bearest not." A promise that we find repeated in the New Covenant Scriptures, that God is able to do exceedingly abundantly above all that we ask or think. He gives us richly all things to enjoy. So we find, as with Messiah, Elisha's miracles were for others. Elisha, when he performed a miracle, it was always for someone else, not for himself. We are not to look on our own things, but on the things of others. We are to pray one for another. Well, the child grew. As Elisha passed by, no doubt, he met the child and saw its progress into boyhood. But now we find that through thoughtlessness and carelessness, the parents lost the blessing, or appeared to have lost it. Verse 18, "And the child grew. Now it happened one day that he went out to his father, to the reapers, and he said to his father, 'My head, my head.' So he said to a servant, 'Carry him to his mother.' When he had taken him and brought him to his mother, he sat on his knees till noon and then died." He was weaned. He was able to travel and view his father with the reapers in the field. But the sun at harvest time is cruel in that part of the world. Even if it's just wheat harvest, which comes Shavuot, that'll be next month, still the sun is merciless, and the boy must have had some kind of a sunstroke. His uncovered head. The parents had forgotten to give him something to shield him, to protect him from the fierce rays of the sun. And so he was carried in a faint to his mother, and he died on her knees. How she must have sponged him down and sought to fan him, but nothing would revive him. And we read verse 21. "She went up and laid him on the bed of the man of God, shut the door upon him, and went out." In hopes of a similar case of deliverance, she may well have heard of how Elijah took the widow's son into his own room and how he raised him from the dead. She had a plan. She was determined on help from the one quarter she knew, and that was Elisha. Look at her language. It's similar to the language of Abraham. Verse 22. "Then she called to her husband and said, 'Please send me one of the young men and one of the donkeys that I may run to the man of God and come back.' So he said, 'Why are you going to him today? It is neither the new moon nor the Sabbath.' And she said, 'It is well.'" Or in Hebrew, shalom. That's how it is in the Hebrew, peace. Abraham, when he was about to lose his son Isaac in sacrifice, he said to the young men that accompanied him, "Wait here with the donkey. I and the lad will go yonder and worship, and we will come again to you." She had the same spirit of faith. Here was something that was given to her by promise that she lost through a moment of thoughtlessness. But we see in this narrative that just as God's promises are never taken away, so what he promises is not taken away. He had promised Isaac to Abraham. Abraham had Isaac back, as it were, from the gates of death. Job lost all that he had, but we find in the end God gave him twice as much as he had before. So we're dealing with a generous and a good God. And what, as the poet puts it, "What thy child's mistake fancies as lost, he has stored for you at home." And what he bids us is, "Rise, clasp my hand, and come." Over and again in our experience, we will find this to be true. that God does not give with one hand and take away with the other. The blessing of the Lord, it maketh rich, and he addeth no sorrow with it. The gifts and the calling of God are without repentance. She found this out. Well, she was going. Her husband wanted to know, why are you going? It's not Shabbat. That gives us a clue. She is to worship on Shabbat. She is to take every opportunity to attend the Shabbat meetings which he presided over. The same with new moons, because every new moon was a sacred day. Monthly or weekly, she looked for spiritual fellowship in an idolatrous civilization, idolatrous country. Israel was given over to idolatry. Elisha and the sons of the prophets were like an oasis. What she said, she spoke in faith. And obviously, she must have hidden her feelings so well, her husband didn't realize what had happened. Verse 24, then she saddled a donkey and said to her servant, drive and go forward. Do not slacken the pace for me unless I tell you. And so she departed and went to the man of God at Mount Carmel. Approximately 16 miles. A cross-country runner will run 12 to 15 miles an hour. Maybe more. I don't know. But in those days, the servants knew how to run. They must have gone at a fast clip, and I would think that it took them just over an hour to get to Mount Carmel from Shunem. Those 16 miles, maybe an hour and a half. Drive and go forward. Servants were used to running before the chariot of the king or running before the horse of their owner. And so she departed and went to the man of God at Mount Carmel. That was one of the centers for sons of the prophets. That was one of the places where they met to worship God. And we know from the ensuing narrative how he sent Gehazi to ask her, is all well with you? Is it well with you? Verse 26, is it well with your husband? Is it well with the child? And again she answered, Shalom, it is well. But when she came to him, she clasped his feet and she vented her grief. She says in verse 28, did I ask a son of my Lord? I never asked for it. It was given to me. It was a free offer, unsolicited. Did I not say, do not deceive me? Disappointed in her request, deprived. That's how she felt. Elisha gave his staff to his servant, Gehazi. He said, run ahead, put my staff. But you can't delegate spiritual power. There were sons of Sceva, we read about in Acts 19, who tried to copy Paul in driving out demons. And instead they got fiercely assaulted and traumatized. That's the word used. Traumatized by the demons. They fled from the demon-possessed man, disheveled, naked, and wounded. So Gehazi too, he found that he was all right as a servant, but spiritual power cannot be delegated like that. Not to a worldly man like Gehazi. Verse 31. Now Gehazi went on ahead of them and laid the staff on the face of the child, but there was neither voice nor hearing. But she would not leave Elisha, so Elisha followed her. I wonder who rode the donkey on the way back. I would think that she was on the donkey and he was trotting beside her. When verse 32, when Elisha came into the house, there was the child lying dead on his bed. And he went in therefore and shut the door behind the two of them and prayed to the Lord. He then stretched his body on the child's body. Someone suggested this was artificial respiration. Really, is it possible to revive someone by artificial respiration who's been dead for hours? There's the miracle child in Alberta. That's all I know about. No, it is obviously not artificial respiration. That's rationalizing the miracle. It was a straight miracle. Elisha transferred his life to the child. Paul did that later on at Troas when a young man called Eutychus fell out of the window. Shows Jewish preachers are long-winded. Paul ran down and embraced the child. He took the child in his arms and he said, "Do not trouble yourselves. His life is still in him." The child sneezed 7 times and opened his eyes. And then we read in verse 36, he called Gehazi and said, "Call this Shunammite woman." So he called her, and when she came to him, he said, "Pick up your son." That's what God says to you and to me. Through thoughtlessness, through carelessness, we lose something precious that he has given to us by promise. But God is a God of compassion, and many times he will put back into your hands that thing which you deserve to have lost. When he gives something by promise, he doesn't give with one hand and take back with the other. That's the important point. So verse 37, she went in, fell at his feet, and bowed to the ground. Then she picked up her son and went out. She did not forget to thank God. How good is the God we adore, our faithful, unchangeable friend, whose love is as great as his power and knows neither measure nor end.